Good morning. This morning, we're going to look quickly at the life of Isaac. And we looked a little bit last week. I guess the story of Abraham and Isaac is partly Isaac, so we looked at Isaac a little. But we're going to look more at the other events that happened in his life, and those things happen in Genesis 24 through 27, and that's where we'll be. Most of the verses will be up on the screen. We'll do a little summarizing along the way. So you're welcome to try to follow along in your Bible, or if not, you can follow along on the screen. Now, we'll remember, way back in Genesis 12, this covenant begins and is restated again in chapter 15, where this great nation is going to come from Abraham. And the first nation of that, first generation of that nation is going to be in Isaac. Isaac comes along as the child born to Abraham and Sarah in their old age. They are 190, and not 190, one of them is 100, one of them is 90. But that's plenty old to have a new child. So they are excited as new parents because they didn't think that they would be able to have this child, even though God promised them, and they wondered how it would happen and thought they were getting too old. And then Isaac comes along. Last week we looked at the story where Abraham is called on to sacrifice Isaac. And I think it's a story a lot of us probably struggle with, and a lot of our culture I know struggles with, this idea that God would ask him to sacrifice. And then at the last moment, at least in Abraham's eyes, God removes the need for that sacrifice and instead provides a lamb. And we talked a little bit last time about how this God that we serve is so different than the other gods that people invented back in that time that would demand such things, at least through their representatives on earth. And we talked about how our God is different and instead provided the sacrifice for us as he did for Abraham and for us through Jesus. Which brings us to Genesis chapter 24. Now we now find a grown Isaac coming along and things are going to begin to change in his life. Starting with dad trying to make things go in the direction they need to go. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. Interesting, before we go too far, he had blessed him in all things. When you look through the story of Abraham, there are quite a few ups and downs in the story of Abraham, and yet this is viewed through God's eyes as a series of blessing, the good and the bad, that there are things that bless Abraham in his walk with God. And Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, "Put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by the Lord." Now, I'm glad we go with contracts and handshakes now, but this is how oaths were made in Bible times. They would put the hand under the thigh, which is pretty much an invasion of personal space in our day and time. But in this day, this is how they would make the oath. "I will swear to you by the Lord, the God of heaven and earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell, but will go to my country, to my kindred, and take a wife for my son Isaac." Abraham is trying to plan ahead and thinking again of this covenant that we just described in chapter 12 and 15, and it's been a recurring theme in the life of Abraham, that the way this covenant is to go is that Isaac will have a wife from his own people, not from the Canaanites. That through this line that will continue to move on, this is how God would choose all the nations to be blessed. So Abraham is going to send a servant back to his people to find Isaac a wife. Sometimes the arranged marriage sounds a whole lot simpler than dating and all of those things. But in this way, this is how they're going to make sure that the line is what the line needs to be. So this fellow goes back, and he is going to go to Abraham's people and find Isaac a wife. And so the way all this goes is he's going to be looking for particular things that this woman is going to do. And we find that as he goes and he's going to this land, he's going to see a woman by the well. And he asks that if this woman by the well will offer water not just to him, but also for his animals and all that, that he will know this is the one. This is the one he's going to choose. And he, in the midst of all this, as soon as he's finished praying these thoughts, this woman comes, offers water, and it's the quickest answer to prayer that you could probably think of. That suddenly here she is, and Rebecca comes out and offers this water to him and for his animals, and this is going to be the wife that Isaac is going to have. A pretty simple plan the way it works, and we see God working through all that. And then we find that Isaac, in chapter 25, after they are married, she is come back with the servant to Isaac's land. There was a concern about whether she would want to stay there and Isaac come there, and Abraham was not good with that, and that was not part of God's plan, but she did decide to come back, and she was happy with Isaac when she got there. They were married, and she could not have children. They were married at 40, and we find towards 60 that she's still not having kids. So you can imagine this 20 years of what almost seems like repeating history of what Abraham and Sarah have had to deal with. In chapter 25, starting in verse 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her. And she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. Probably a good place for us to start, too, when we find ourselves in that position where we just ask the question, why is this happening to me? Or maybe the way you hear the question now, why do bad things happen to good people? We seem to start there a lot. When these things are happening, her initial thought is, I'm going to ask God about this, and we should do the same. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out all red, and his body like a hairy cloak. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." You have these two boys that are completely different in almost every way. And immediately, I totally connect with this story. Because in our house, we have two boys that, although they have their similarities, they are different in all kinds of ways. And I would imagine, and it scares me a little bit to think it, that there are probably times when these two boys think a little bit about us, or maybe me, the way that we see it described here with Isaac and with Rebekah. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. David and I have a connection of Alabama football. Nathan could care less about Alabama football. Roll Tide, yes. I forgot you were here. It's one of those things that it makes things difficult at times, because one of my things that I would just automatically love to do is find any excuse to go get tickets and go see an Alabama football game. And there is one other person in my house that would enjoy doing that too. Now, my wife might like going along just to be friendly, but then Nathan would be home alone, and that would be awkward. So David and I have gone to a few Alabama football games. Now, the struggle becomes, what do Nathan and I do? Because he doesn't care about Alabama football. And if I took him to Alabama football, David would view it as great. Nathan would view it as punishment of some kind, probably. And we have this separation. So there was a day where I really noticed the difference between our two boys and beyond the Alabama football. In the morning, when David was, I believe, a fifth grader, I went to watch David compete in the county spelling bee. And I was in my nerd element as I was watching all this. I was in the spelling bee when I was a kid, and I was watching all this stuff go, and he did great. He was going past all these seventh and eighth graders as a fifth grader, and I was proud, and I was watching, and I was taking pictures, and I was posting it on Facebook and all of this stuff. And we got through all of that, and he was, I believe, the last fifth grader standing, which was pretty cool. And we went home, and we were excited about it. And then that evening, Nathan and I got in the car, and we drove to Little Rock. We lived in Arkansas at the time, and we went to the Monster Truck Rally. Morning at the spelling bee, evening at the Monster Truck Rally. And I thought, this is my boys. This is what we do. Now, sometimes it would be easy for Nathan to say, you like David better because of Alabama football. Or sometimes it would be easy for David to say, you like Nathan better because you took him to see monster trucks. Or they might say, because my wife and Nathan seem to have this connection that I don't have with Nathan, to the point that when he was a small guy, I would pick him up from the crib when he was crying at night and nothing would change. He would just continue to cry until I handed him to Stacy, and then everything was fine. And I finally just said, why don't I just keep sleeping and take out the middleman here, and we'll go on with life. And it would be easy for Nathan to say, well, we have this connection, and David and I have this connection. And for Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Esau, there was this struggle that would begin to show itself throughout life and would carry on another generation to Jacob when he has his own children of favoritism. And we read this, and part of why we park here for a second is to say, this favoritism My screen just went away. There we go. This favoritism doesn't lead us to a place we want to go. It leads us to more division of people who are already different. And here we see that they are different. Now, there is not a, this one is better because of this, and this one is worse because of this. They are just different. And it describes Jacob as being quieter and dwelling in tents, and Esau as being hairy and a hunter, and those two guys could be able to complement each other within the household, but instead it becomes this thing that divides them, that we will see to continue on. Now, as we continue in chapter 25, when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted, and probably thinking to himself, I've been in the field all day, hunting, doing difficult things, and you're cooking stew. What's this all about? Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Therefore, his name was called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Now, I have heard these kinds of things develop in my own house, where one brother wants something of the other, and the other is willing to trade away anything to get to that thing, not having foresight to see what it means. Esau said, I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? Now, a little overdramatic here. He will probably continue to make it without a meal at this moment, but he is hungry. Jacob said, swear to me now. Okay, promise. Promise that this is how it's going to be. Promise this is what's going to happen. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. I'm reminded of a text that my wife got one time when we were out on a date, and I believe it was from Nathan, if I remember right, and the text from Nathan said, whatever David tells you, he's lying. And we said, this can't be good. I don't know what's going on. And we found out there was a disagreement and what it was about and all those kinds of things, and everything was fine. But brothers tend to get that way with each other at times. And Jacob and Esau have this healthy at times and yet very unhealthy at times difference about them that leads to this whole conversation. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And I think this is a very important footnote, I guess, here at the end of the chapter. He despised his birthright. Now, we get at Jacob a lot when we read this story because this seems very conniving to kind of withhold this stew and say, well, if you sell your birthright, then you can be filled. You won't be hungry anymore. Everything, you're not going to die. Everything will be fine. This is delicious stew over here, and all you have to do is this. But what we learn about Esau at the end here is he despised this anyway. Now, we lose a little bit of this because we don't always do this the same way in our culture now. But the way the birthright worked in this day and time was the oldest would basically get a double portion of the inheritance. And they would be kind of the senior person in decision-making and all of these kinds of things. And so for Esau to give that up is kind of a big decision to make, and yet for whatever reason, he doesn't want it. And I don't know what drives that, but I think maybe a little bit of the context of what we just read might drive that, which is there is a dysfunction within this family, where people have favorites, and it's clear that that's the way it is. And because of that, Esau, at least partially in his mind, is thinking, I don't want any of your stuff anyway. I mean, clearly mom likes him better and not me, and so keep your birthright. I don't care. And so Jacob comes up with this idea that I'm going to take the birthright and do it in this way. And Jacob's name, by the way, one of the meanings of the name is deceiver, which is why we get so into this story and negative about Jacob. But we also have to remember the side of Esau, which is Esau just really doesn't seem all that concerned with this, to the point that he would get rid of it just based on a bowl of soup. Which takes us to the next story in chapter 27. Now, one thing before we get there. Chapter 26 is this interesting tale of Abimelech. And you may remember Abimelech from several chapters back, where Abraham runs into Abimelech, or Abram at the time, and he is concerned that Abimelech might want him dead because his wife is attractive, and so he tells Abimelech that his wife is actually his sister, which leads to a whole lot of drama, and Abimelech nearly going in directions he doesn't want to go, and then getting upset and saying, why did you lie to me? And we learn about Abraham, although he has this trust, sometimes has trust issues, and fear takes over. And then, interestingly enough, when we see Isaac down the road, this whole thing repeats itself. And Isaac goes through some of the same issues in chapter 26, which leads us to chapter 27. When Isaac was old, and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau his older son and said to him, "My son," and he answered him, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me and prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." So he is offering now to Esau a blessing, ironically enough, in exchange for food. Now this is a blessing that should come Esau's way anyway, because even at the loss of his birthright, this blessing from the father would still come to the firstborn. Rebekah is not happy with this plan, because as we learned at the beginning of all this, Rebekah has a favorite, and that favorite is Jacob. And she and Jacob have this connection. So she cooks up a plan and some food. She has this idea that, why don't you get this food that I will prepare, and you take it to your father, and we're going to put some goat skin, some fur on you, and he can't see. And so we're going to play a little trick on Dad. You go in there with this food that he's asked for, and he will smell that you smell like this game and this goat skin, and then he will feel your arm and realize you are hairy, because remember back to the beginning of the story, Esau was hairy, Jacob was not, and he will think you are your brother, and then he will instead give you the blessing. And so then we see this all begin to unfold. Jacob goes in, takes the food, has the disguise, goes to his father. His father asks, "Who is this that's before me?" Jacob says, "It's your oldest son, of course. I'm here with what you've requested." And Isaac is fooled by it all. He's fooled by the food that has been brought to him. He is fooled by the fur on his arms, and he thinks that it is the oldest son there, and he proceeds to give him a blessing. And this blessing is that he will be blessed by these nations around him, and that he will rule over the family, and he will be the one who continues on this covenant with God. And then Esau comes back with the game, as he's been asked for, and he's ready for his blessing, only to find out that Jacob has instead taken the blessing. And we learn something about Esau in all of this too, that he really does despise the birthright that he lost not too long ago, and he's going to despise it to the level that when Jacob is told to go and find a wife and to go the same pattern that Isaac did and find a wife from his people, when Esau finds out that's what Dad wants, he goes to find a wife of the Canaanites just for spite, just to make Dad mad because he has not received this blessing. And Esau asks, "Can I have this blessing?" And Isaac says, "Too late. I've already given this blessing to your brother." Which I think tells us a couple things. One, food becomes such a big issue about all of this, which is just bizarre when you look at the story, that these people are so ruled by food. And I think for us, we can look and realize that sometimes the needs of life, the things that we want or need, start to overrule good sense, start to overrule the things we know that God provides, the things that God gives us. We see those things so much in front of us that we can't see past them for God. We looked at that in our Bible class this morning, the idea that these 5,000 folks in Matthew 14 were out there looking for food, and because of that need for food, they just couldn't see everything else that they needed to be able to see, and Jesus saw that need and fed them. Here, the food is used like a bargaining chip, and they are doing some pretty dumb things in the name of food, which brings us to the question this morning: what will we trade for our blessing, or what will you trade for your blessing? And I think everybody within the midst of this story, if they could look and see big picture, they would not have done the things that they did. Esau would not have traded his birthright away for a cup of stew. Isaac would not have given the blessing to the wrong person if he had known in the name of some food. And yet each of us today, as we look at what seems like the ridiculousness of parts of this story, we are trading away the blessing God is trying to give us in the name of any number of things. We go off in search of wealth. We go off in search of things. We go off in search of a lifestyle that doesn't match up with what God designs. We go off in search of politics to fill that thing. We go off in search of notoriety or fame or whatever it may be. And we have convinced ourselves that this other thing will bring me what I need. This other thing will bring me happiness. And what we're doing in the process is trading away our blessing from God. And we're just not conscious of it. And if we were to write down the whole story the way someone did with the story of Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Esau back in these days, if we were to write our whole story down of the things we've traded away for the blessings of God, people would read that story and think, what in the world? And we would probably read our own story sometimes and think, what in the world were we thinking? Now, the beauty of this story this morning is we have the whole thing laying in front of us to see and to learn from. And this morning, if we take a good look into our own lives, I think most of us can find something that we are trying to trade away and replace God's blessing with it. And it will not be adequate, because the blessing God has brought us is far beyond anything we can ask for or anything we can imagine. And this morning, if you look at your life and you think to yourself, I'm chasing after the proverbial bowl of stew. It's time to stop chasing after that thing, whatever it may be, and it's time instead to take the blessing that God will give us. This morning, if you have not accepted that blessing, we learned last week that God provided a sacrifice for you a long time ago, and that sacrifice still carries on to bring you back to Him. If you have not accepted that, if you have not confessed His name, if you have not been baptized into Christ, this morning is the day to change that and instead of taking on all those other things to receive the blessing God has provided for you. This morning, if you've taken that blessing and you know that birthright is yours, and yet you realize you're not living a life that shows that, and there are ways we can help you, we're happy to do that too. This morning, if there are things that seem impossible in your life that you need us as a church family to pray for you, the way that Isaac prayed that a child would come his way, the way we learned of the impossible this morning in Bible class when Jesus feeds people when there's not enough food to start with, He still does those things in our lives today. And He does so many of those things through the encouragement of our church family. If there are any needs you have, whether it's to take Him on for the first time, things we can pray for in your life, something you just need your church family to know about, please come while we stand and sing.